ஓம் நம சிவாய. டியர் லிசனர்ஸ் ஆஃப் சைவம் .org, தி நெக்ஸ்ட் ப்ரோக்ராம் இஸ் ஸ்பிரிச்சுவல் டிஸ்கோர்ஸ். இன் திஸ் யூ ஆர் அபவுட் டு லிசன் கவாய் ஹிந்து லெக்சர்ஸ். தி டைட்டில்ஸ் ஆர் கர்மா மேனேஜ்மெண்ட் தேர்ட் பார்ட், டு எர் இஸ் ஹியூமன், அண்ட் வேலண்டைன்ஸ் டே டு லார்ட் சிவா. பிரசன்டட் பை ஸ்ரீ சிவாய போதிநாத வேலாயுத சுவாமி. தேங்க்யூ. ஓம் நம சிவாய.
செவன்த் பிரின்சிபல், எக்ஸலரேட் கர்ம. So the idea of accelerating karma, I was looking through the Saivite Shastras this morning to see what it said about karma. I'm stuck in karma in my search through the Saivite Shastras, and it popped up all the entries talked about karma. And one of them, which I had forgotten about, talked about accelerating karma, and it talked about the monastic pattern, 36-year pattern. Remember, we've talked about that before. The monastic training pattern is 36 years long. And when it first came out, it says right in the Saivite Shastras themselves, it says, when the monks were first told this, which was in 1973 or 4, it seemed like to many of them a long, long, long time. 36 years of training. So, but the point the other verse was making is that within a monastic's life, he goes through four lifetimes of karma. That's specifically what it said. I hadn't recalled that. Four lifetimes. It said one lifetime is in the first 12 years, one lifetime is in the second 24 years, and another lifetime is after the 36 years. I didn't specify where the fourth one was. I imagine that's before he became a monk, would be the first one. So we go through four lifetimes. So that's a perfect example of accelerating karma, right? We skip three lives. This is pretty good. We're obviously getting to moksha more quickly. So that's the idea of accelerating. So in that spirit, why wait 20 more births to achieve spiritual maturity when you could achieve it in only five? This is the idea of accelerating karma. Then there's a quote from Gurudeva. When meditation begins, our individual karma is intensified. So just the practice of beginning meditation causes our karma to accelerate. Meaning practicing it regularly, not just meditating once, but beginning the regular practice of meditation, sustaining it, causes our karma to accelerate. In our first 4 or 5 years of striving on the path, we face the karmic patterns that we would have never faced in this life had we not consciously sought enlightenment. In a few months, we experience what would have otherwise taken a few lifetimes. Of course, the duties of our normal life do not allow much time for meditation. Thus, this principle best fits into sannyasa, both those following the path of the monk, as well as everyone after the age of 72, when in the sannyasa ashrama of life. So retirement can be more than playing golf, hanging around the house. It's an opportunity to intensify our spiritual practices and thus accelerate our karma. So that's a natural part of Hindu dharma. Where the householder is a sannyasa ashram. And of course, it's not understood at all in the West, so it may seem a little strange, but it's totally understood in Asia. And it's common to find those in the sannyasa ashrama, meaning over age 72, pilgrimaging in India, spending time in ashrams, so forth, living in Varanasi. They're following this practice of accelerating their karma through intensifying their meditation and other sadhanas. So the last principle we developed, the eighth principle, is called incinerate karma. So I was meditating on that this morning when the Homa fire was there, thinking about incineration and practice of incinerating karma. So, Gurudeva says, in the practice of yoga, the negative seed karmas can actually be burned up without ever having to be lived through. What we have to do is dissolve them in intense inner light. Goes on to say, it is the held back force of sanchitta karma that the yogi seeks to burn out with his kundalini flame, to disempower it within the karmic reservoir of anandamaya kosha, the soul body. So the idea is, when the kundalini is very intense, then one of the consequences is that karmic seeds are burned. So the idea is that if you heat a seed to a certain degree, it won't sprout. So I was thinking, you know, alfalfa sprouts. Now normally get your alfalfa and you get it moist and you put it in a jar and it sprouts, right? Before then it's in a bag. So it sprouts. So that's like karma manifesting in your life. Seed karma, when it sprouts, is something you experience. It manifests an experience in the first world. That's what sprouting means. But if you take those seeds and you heat them to a certain temperature, I don't know exactly how hot, then you try and sprout them, they won't sprout, right? So that's the idea of burning up a seed karma. You're taking the karma, which is in seed form, meaning it's sitting there, but it's not going to cause anything to happen. You're getting it up to a temperature where the ability to sprout goes away. So it's incinerated. It won't manifest an experience anymore. So that's the intensity of the kundalini causes that to happen. Incinerates karma. So that's a pretty advanced practice. And there's a beautiful explanation of it. It's even poetic by Gurudeva. It says, in the heart chakra, in bhakti, karmas are in a molten state, blended together. The throat chakra molds the karmas through sadhana. Third eye chakra sees the karmas, past, present, and future, as a singular oneness. Crown chakra absorbs, burns clean enough of the karmas to open the gate, door of Brahman, revealing the straight path to merging with Shiva. So this adds the idea that it's the crown chakra, the Sarasvara chakra. When the kundalini has activated that up to a certain intensity, that's what incinerates the karmas. So that's our process in review. We have eight principles so far. Our first one, forego retaliation. Unless you do that, the whole thing doesn't work. Second one, accept responsibility. Third, forgive the offender. Fourth, consider the consequences. Fifth, create no negative karma. Sixth, mitigate past karma. Seven, accelerate karma. And eighth, incinerate karmas. So you can all get a certificate for having passed our seminar in effective karma management. Om Namah Shivaya. Came up last week in communications with various shishya, and it's the idea of making a mistake and how we react to a mistake that we make. So, of course, the common first reaction is to feel bad, feel sad, to get emotional, and wish we hadn't done it. And depending on how we were raised, that sadness can be small or large. If we were raised in a way to feel bad when we made mistakes, if that's what our parents emphasized, that blame and shame you made that mistake, you should have never have done that, you know, how could you be so stupid kind of approach, then of course as an adult, when we make a mistake, we feel much worse than if we weren't raised that way. But in any case, that's a natural first reaction, but we need to move beyond it. We can't just stop there and end up feeling sad about it or extremely discouraged about it and leave the matter at that point. So I was thinking of a phrase, and the one famous phrase, to err is human, but to forgive is divine. Remember that phrase? So I created a variation on the phrase, which is, to err is human, but to err only once is divine. We all make mistakes, but if we can make them only once, that's better than keeping on repeating the same mistake. And we have that ability, and someone who is self-reflective and focused on what they're doing, the natural reaction after becoming sad is to think about, gee, how can I prevent myself from doing this again? What did I do wrong? Was I simply careless? Am I lacking certain knowledge? You know, why is it that I did this in the first place? So that's someone who's really striving, not just kind of living in a fog of emotion or not really being mindful. So, of course, that's the objective, is to find out what's missing. Perhaps we need some knowledge. Perhaps there's something we didn't learn about this subject that we need to know. Maybe we need to ask an expert or read a book. Maybe we just weren't paying attention. We were thinking about one thing and doing another, and that's why we made a mistake. So we need to resolve to pay more attention next time we're doing this, because there's certainly no reason we want to repeat the same mistake twice. So that's a necessary second reaction, stepping beyond just feeling bad, figuring out why it occurred and making sure it won't occur again. So that's being divine. To err only once is divine, meaning we're on the spiritual path. We're taking our mistakes seriously and striving not to make them twice. However, even a third step is needed if other people were involved. We may have upset them in some way by this mistake. We may have just caused strained feelings, where feelings were flowing harmoniously before. So if either of those situations has occurred, then we need to fix the situation with the other person as the third step of having made this mistake. So perhaps an apology would be appropriate. That's the most direct way of fixing something. But if we're not that close to someone, like if they're a coworker at work, an apology may seem out of place. So just extra friendly words or a gift or some kind action that we normally wouldn't do is a way of fixing the flow of emotional force between us to get it back into a harmonious flow. And if we made a mistake that hurt someone's feelings, in that case, to help them let go of the hurt feelings toward us by the apology. So that's a third step when a mistake occurs. If other people are involved, fixing emotional force. And there's even a fourth step. This is reserved for serious mistakes. Let's say in a weak moment we did something that was dishonest. Whether we're a student and we cheated slightly on a test, or an adult, we fudged on our tax returns or whatever, you know. We did something that was technically dishonest. And afterwards, we feel bad about it. Of course, we resolve not to do it. And in this case, no one else was involved, so we don't have to apologize, but we still feel bad about it. Well, what's needed? We need to do a penance. If after all the other corrections have been done to a mistake and we still feel bad, it means our conscience is telling us we did something that we really shouldn't have. And the way Gurudeva has taught us to compensate is we do a penance, prostration penance, some kind, a bit serious. Maybe we fly off to Fiji do a serious penance, depending on what it is. But in any case, as a result of the penance, any sense of feeling bad about it should be gone. There's no reason we should feel bad about a mistake. We should get rid of that feeling. Because we all make mistakes. It's natural to make mistakes. To err is human. So we need to accept that. That's how we learn. But when we do learn, we should feel good about having learned. We shouldn't feel it's bad still. It's like in school, you know, if we're studying mathematics, we don't quite understand something and we get it wrong, you know, we don't feel that bad. We study a little harder and we get it right. You know, life is like that too. So the sense of feeling bad because of a mistake should be gotten rid of one way or another. These same principles regarding mistakes apply in the case of parent to child, teacher to student, or supervisor to his or her staff. So if a mistake is made, the elder person, the parent, the teacher, the supervisor, needs to help the younger person understand, gain new knowledge, so that the person doesn't make the mistake again. That's the whole goal, is to not repeat the mistake. So quite often, that's not the response that's given. You know, the parent doesn't sit down and figure out why the child made the mistake, take that amount of time, and train the child, give the child new knowledge that the child is obviously lacking, so the mistake isn't made again. That doesn't always happen. It's more likely to happen with a teacher because the teacher is paid to teach. So the teacher knows, gee, the student made a mistake. Maybe I didn't do my job. Maybe there's something I need to teach the child so the child won't make the same mistake again. And a supervisor and staff depends on the situation. Some are more prone to train than others. But if a supervisor has staff that makes a mistake, the first thought should be, is there something I need to train this staff in that they don't know? Are they lacking knowledge? So I had a wonderful conversation a couple of weeks ago with Iraja Sivadas, and he's, of course, in Northern California and taking care of his mother there. And he's teaching at a school for, how would you call the students? Say they're disturbed, emotionally disturbed children are going to this school. They have learning difficulties and grown up in difficult situations, so it takes extra patience to teach them. And so he's having a very interesting experience there, dealing with these children, and quite often the ones that have the most trouble learning are the ones that come from the most difficult family situations, where there was divorce at a very young age, and so forth. So he has the personal history file of each student, and he studies that in conjunction with teaching them, so that when difficulties come up, when they reject his teaching and give him a bad time, he can try and understand their personal histories. So he finds that very helpful in terms of helping them acquire the knowledge. And he has an interesting approach to mathematics. He's so good at it that he doesn't even need to follow the textbook. You know, he's an MA in math, so it's just second nature to him. It's like a good music teacher doesn't have to follow a music training book. Just knows how to teach music. So he knows how to teach math, and he's come up with a way of accommodating different people's natures. He's found that he teaches each point in three different ways, teaches three different ways to solve a specific kind of problem, and one of the ways clicks with each student, but he doesn't know which way will work. But there's different ways that people understand mathematics. Isn't that interesting? So he presents it in three different ways, and each student says, well, of course, that way it makes sense, but the other two don't. Why'd you even bother to teach those? But each student will choose one of the different three ways and not the same, of course. So all three ways are necessary. So it shows that he's a good teacher, that he's found an effective way to convey these principles to people based upon experience. So he's an excellent teacher of the subject, and I'm sure students learn more about mathematics from him than from most mathematics teachers who just follow the textbook in a simple way. So he's taking that principle very seriously. If someone makes a mistake, it means I need to pass on additional information to them that they don't have so they won't make the mistake twice. Starting our new phase today, and we have an invitation tomorrow to give the blessing at the county council. We're one of the churches that they invite on a regular basis. So, of course, in the past, Gurudev has given the blessing. So this will be my first opportunity to give you 3 whole minutes. Says it can be 3 minutes or less. You know? They want a blessing, but they want to get down to business, too. So. And, of course, that's tomorrow, so it's Valentine's Day. And can't help but run into advertisements for Valentine's Day all over the place. And so I was thinking about it and saying, well, Valentine's Day, giving a blessing on Valentine's Day. Isn't that interesting? Valentine's Day, a secular holiday, a holiday to do with romance. You know, doesn't have much to do with being a Hindu monk, was my first conclusion. But then I started to think about it. I said, well, you know, Valentine's Day, maybe there's a way we could turn it into a Saivite holy day. So that's my first thought this morning I wanted to share with you. So how can you turn Valentine's Day into a Saivite holy day? So, well, what is Valentine's Day? It's the day you compliment a sweetheart with cards and gifts. That's what the dictionary says. You compliment a sweetheart with cards and gifts. So I hope all of our husbands and wives have that well in hand for tomorrow. But so the question is, to turn it into a Saivite holy day, does God Shiva qualify as a sweetheart? God Shiva has to qualify as a sweetheart. Otherwise, you know, he can't be honored on Valentine's Day. So what's a sweetheart? So a sweetheart is threefold definition. One who is dearly loved. Okay. That sounds reasonable. Second one, a generally likable person is a sweetheart. Third one, a remarkable one of a kind. A remarkable one of its kind. So you think God Shiva qualifies as a sweetheart? I think so. He definitely has all three qualities. So if we want to make God Shiva our Valentine, we just have to express all of this on Valentine's Day. So we're a day early, but you have to allow for poetic license here. So we need a Valentine card. So what does a Valentine card express? So dictionary again says, it expresses uncritical praise and affection. Uncritical praise and affection. Doesn't that sound like so many of our Saivite hymns? Poti poti. You know, uncritical praise and affection. So, Saivite lore is filled with Valentine's cards, filled with hymns we can use on Valentine's Day to praise and love God Shiva in that way. So I chose one from the Nachindanai. Put on my glasses to read it. It's called All Is You. So this is our Valentine's card to God Shiva, and I sent it to God Shiva and the fire so it would be delivered on time. Burn the copy. All is you. Father and mother are you. Dear brothers and sisters are you. Incomparable wife is you. Precious sons are you, royal potentates are you, the devas and all the gods are you, this great earth is you, and that which guards and governs me is also you. You it was who stayed the river, You are he whose half is Shakti. You are the truth-revealing Vedas. You are both righteousness and error. You are the one adorned with ashes. You are he with an eye upon his brow. You are the prize that I have gained. You are the one who has made me yours. Indra and the gods are you. The multitude of rishis are you. Both the sun and the moon are you. Tis you who as the lingam stands. Mantra and tantra are you. This life and the next are you. All beauty and loveliness is you, and our protector too is you. You are the one without an end. You are the Lord who is my Father. You are in truth the changeless one. You are that which is in the heart. You are he who has no parts. You are also all beliefs. You are that which is known through search. You are order and perfection. That which is love is you. Body and life are also you. Far and near are you. Truth and untruth too are you. Verse and melody are you. The contents of the song are you. Numbers and letters are you. And that which is my help is you. You are all benefits. You are the true support of life. You are the almighty judge. You are yesterday and today. You are that understood by learning. You are the heart of the best of men. You are religion and you are race. And it is you who has made of me your man. Everything that is you. Your lady forms one half of you. All might and power is you. All the days of our life are you. Many there are who glorify you. He who came on the horse was you. The hearts of all good men are you, and that which is myself is you. You are he who rides the bull. 'Twas you who kicked the god of death. 'Tis you who are the guru comes. 'Tis you who as the guru comes. 'Tis you indeed who are my refuge. You are what cannot be told. You are the self-existent one. You are that beyond all praise, and 'tis you behind the intellect. He who bestows alms is you, and he who accepts alms is you. The entire universe is you. The bright-browed lady's spouse is you. He adorned with snakes is you. That which is sweet to worship is you. He of beauteous form is you. What lies within the heart is you. The universal one is you. That without place or name is you. That which is good is you. What will be tomorrow is you. Mountains and seas are you. The whole of this wide world is you. What is in the open hall is you. That devoid of taint is you. That splendor known as Om is you. That which has no form is you. That which affirms is you. And that which negates is you. That which is free of sloth is you. That which is the truth is you. Our safeguard is also you. And all embodied souls are you. That which envy knows is you. What becomes the letters five is you. He who holds the dear is you. That which exists as I is you. All upright minds are you. That behind all thought is you. That which is divine is you. Guru and disciple, both are you. That's our Valentine.